It well, I can't describe to you how overwhelming it is to wake up to millions of people talking about your sex life. It was not.
No, I can't imagine. I don't even like when.
Yeah, not something I wanted. Yeah, no. Not something I expected. No. You know, it was really hard for me because I was still exploring my sexuality. Right. I didn't know how I defined myself. Mm-hmm. And here you have literally thousands of emails. I'm not kidding when I say I got thousands of emails of people accusing me of things. And really from all sides, every sexual orientation.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Mike Iameli, on the Too Old for This Shit podcast. I'm your host, Angie Sorensen. You can come and find me at angies.com. That's angie-s.com or on my Linktree link, which is linktree.com/Too Old for This Shit. Both links are in the show notes. Just like every week. Listen, that's the place you can go if you want to be part of my community, if you want me to show you how to create your own podcast and get involved with what I do. I'd love to see you there. So if you like the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you are listening to right now. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show. In today's episode with Mike, we discuss how both his now husband and himself went from thinking they were straight to now building a romantic life together. This story went viral before they were ready, and it sort of took them onto a whole specific journey. But this partly led him to creating a formula that helps others figuring out who they truly are without any of the labels, which can be applied to not just to sex and your sexuality, but business and friendships and how you approach life. So please help me welcome the wonderful Mike. And without further ado, let's begin. Welcome, Mike. Thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, look, I'm actually really excited to have you on the podcast because your personal story is unusual in the way that it unfolded in the public eye. And so yeah. I love to talk with you about the fluidity of sex and love and sort of using your love story as the backdrop that propelled you on this journey. And so before we dive in, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Sure. So I'm Mike Iameli. I live in Boston, Mass. And introducing myself is always interesting because I think at a different point in my life, I would have said, you know, a job title or my relationship or something about that. But the truth is I'm aligned, zany, free, unmistakable, successful, and vulnerable. And even if that doesn't make much sense to you yet, I promise you it will by the end of this interview. And so, you know, what I do for work is I help people to kind of map their sensitivities, their lived experiences, and figure out who are they without any of the labels, or what do they naturally do every time they're successful in their lives, and then how to build a life around that.
Okay, brilliant. So I have two questions on what you just said. What did you mean by zany? Do you mean zen? Is that what that means?
Nope. Zany is, it means like playful, goofy, fun, silly.
How do you spell zany?
Z-A-N-Y. This is a word that comes from Italian roots originally. Zani was the original name, and it was a nickname for Gianni or John.
Yeah.
And it was the stock character in Commedia dell'arte, so the kind of Italian art form. It was the predecessor to the clown. So zany kind of means the clown-like energy.
Yeah, I remember Commedia dell'arte from school when I studied theater. Isn't it the one where they always say, well, in French we say rustre, where they used to always call the man rustre, means like, you know, like brutes.
Yeah, right. Yes. And so Zanni was the kind of the long nose, and he looks like a clown. Mm-hmm. That type of energy is how we get clowns today. So Zanni is kind of this goofy clown-like energy.
Okay, well, I learned something today. That's great. So already within like 2 minutes. And the second question is, what does it mean when you say you map sensitivities? Because I did see that on your website. But could you explain what that means?
Of course. So basically, And as we get into my story, you can understand a little bit more. But basically is I help people to understand that we experience life through our senses. We see, taste, touch, smell, hear life. And those things we're most sensitive to are going to be the same throughout our entire lives. So if as a baby, you were really sensitive to freedom and you felt trapped easily, then your entire life, you're always going to look for opportunities to free yourself. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel really trapped whenever you're in a relationship or a friendship that, you know, doesn't make you feel free. You're going to want work that makes you feel free. And you're going to feel most traumatized, or all of your trauma is going to make you feel trapped. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see this go on, and all of your emotions can actually be boiled down to the same 5 or 6 core sensitivities. And so my work is really to just listen to people's stories. I listen to trauma and happiness and sex and joy and everything, and understanding the core of kind of who they are or what they're most sensitive to in the world. And then I will work with, let's say, actors or comedians who will build a brand using that. I'll work with people wanting to improve their intimacy and sex lives using that and understanding what they really need to feel. People in relationship fights, a whole bunch of different ways that people will use this work.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds really interesting. I can't wait to actually get into that. And I just had like a couple of thoughts with what you just said about the freedom and trapped thing. Yeah. And I was just like, actually, maybe also, could it also be that you may not have necessarily been aware that you felt trapped as a kid. However, you may have seen a parent looking like the way you perceive their life is that they were trapped because they had to be responsible for you and do work that they may not have enjoyed. And therefore, you seeking that opposite, that you want to feel free and satisfied in your life.
Exactly. So our sensitivities are just how, like our perception, what we notice about life, what we're most sensitive to. All day long, a million things are happening, but what we are sensitive to is what we notice. And so when we understand our sensitivities, we're understanding how we perceive life and therefore the decisions we make and why we make those decisions.
I'm so glad you brought that up because, and not to get into it because that would be a whole other episode, but I just want to make this little bracket. That's one other layer to explain how people reacted to the pandemic, right? Because you have the people who are like anti-mask and people who are like, no, let's follow the rules. And it's not to do with whether someone is a good person or a bad person or considerate, inconsiderate, because I don't really believe in that. I think it's just more how it's to do with a deeper value and a deeper, probably like a sensitivity, like you mentioned. It's just how we translate and how we move forward in this world, right?
Absolutely. You know, our values are going to be based in our sensitivities. Obviously, other things like social conditioning and our families and that type of stuff too. But yeah, our sensitivities are going to start to dictate our values, even our desires. All of these things really come down to a core emotional need. Anytime we get in a fight with someone, like let's say if we're partnered, a fight with a partner, it's never really about the thing we think it's about. It's about some unmet emotional need, right? We know that. And so when we know our sensitivities, we know that really every fight I've ever had is only about 6 different things. And if I can just ask myself, okay, what am I not feeling? What's triggered here? I'm able to then change the conversation. And I'll give you an example because I think it might help. You know, let's say it doesn't happen often, but let's say I got in a fight with my husband. And let's pretend that I was telling him a personal story and he was looking at his phone. And so I'm yelling at him because I do not want, you know, him. He's not paying attention to me. I feel disrespected. And instead of yelling at him about how he always listens to or looks at his phone when I'm talking, if I just said, okay, am I triggered by feeling not free or zany or vulnerable? Okay, that's the one. And instead of yelling at him about his phone today, I might say, you know, Garrett, I feel like I'm being really vulnerable here and I'm sharing something that I'm a little bit ashamed of and you're not even giving me time or space. And so what I need is, one, I'm working on my own shame around this issue. And two, the support that I would need is for you to validate me and really be present when I'm being vulnerable. And it's interesting because what starts to happen is in the past, we would have been on opposite sides fighting one another. But now that I identify my core need and I say, here's one thing I can do and here's one thing you can do, we become on the same team, both trying to help support this issue and grow together. And that's just one example of how I could use it.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Absolutely. Because I think a lot of the time is if, you know, with any relationship, whether it's family, friends, lovers, you know, husbands, spouses, whatever you want to call them, right? It's like sometimes you feel like, I wish there was like a manual they came with, because, or I could give them the manual to me if I could understand myself better. I'm sure like a lot of people probably think that way sometimes, because how do we, what does that person want from me? Like, how come they're not hearing me? How come they're not reacting the way I want them to react, right? So it kind of gives that little manual to relationships of any kind, right?
It's just what we're most sensitive to. And so I am so blessed. I do this work every day. I know my husband's sensitivities, and that makes it a lot easier, because then I can say, oh, wait a minute, this is how he might be seeing the situation. And we get to have a conversation about that.
Yeah, I think definitely understanding other people helps to be, you know, to have more empathy. And I think that is so important. And so, okay, so to rewind a little bit, you know, because obviously you mentioned your husband a few times, and I wanted to ask you if you could tell us a little bit how you and your husband got together, because if I understand you correctly, prior to your now husband, you never considered a soul man in that way. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, my story starts with, I was pretty successful early in life. So through a series of kind of coincidences, I ended up owning a public relations agency when I was 22. Actually, I was still in college, and I started a very successful agency with some partners at a big firm. And I had to graduate early just to, you know, take over ownership. And so I was working with a lot of, you know, celebrities and tech billionaires and healthcare politicians in the U.S. And then a few years later, I woke up one day and I was vomiting blood. And it was really scary for me, as you can imagine. You know, I was vomiting blood every day.
Wow.
It didn't stop for months. I went to the emergency room to get fluids because I was losing fluids. I couldn't really eat. I was losing weight. One day early on, I went to work because I still felt up to going to work. And I realized I had to go to the bathroom. And I ran to go to the bathroom and I didn't make it in time. And I shit my pants at work.
Yeah.
And it was the most devastating thing that's ever happened, right? It was so embarrassing for me. And I realized I need to do something about this. And so I started going to, you know, doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I started to go to different reflexology or Reiki or acupuncture, just anything that could try to get me better.
It sounded very stress related.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I had this very stressful job. I was going out a lot, I don't know how I had the energy back then. Now, looking back, I don't know what I was doing, but I would, you know, work all day, go out till 2 or 3 in the morning, and then somehow work the next day. And
that's the magic of the 20s.
It's the magic of the 20s, exactly. That's what it was.
It's long gone now for me.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel. I do not have that anymore, but in my 20s, I somehow did. Mm. And so, you know, at the time, I was so sick, and I couldn't even drive myself to appointments. I couldn't even cook for myself anymore. And so I had two roommates at the time. One of them was my older sister's friend who had just moved to the city. And she had a boyfriend, so she didn't spend a lot of time at home. She spent less than half the week at home. And the other was a guy I knew from college that we were friends, but we weren't, you know, super close. And he was a medical professional. He was on residency. And so just by chance, he knew the system. He knew a lot of the places I needed to go to get prescriptions. And he was home during the day. So he became my de facto caretaker. And he would, you know, drive me to appointments or cook me dinner some days when I couldn't get off the couch. And, you know, sometimes stay in with me at night because I couldn't go out. And so we began to get really close over these few months where I was sick every day. And one day it kind of dawned on me that I think I feel something for him. And it felt strange because, you know, it didn't feel sexual. It didn't even feel romantic, but it felt like something's here that doesn't exactly feel like friendship, and I don't know how to describe it, because at that point in my life, I had never been with a man, and to my conscious knowledge, never been interested in a man. And it wasn't that I thought, you know, I had a lot of gay friends at the time. I lived in San Francisco. It was never something, you know, I've always kind of considered myself bohemian. So it was never something I thought would be, you know, a bad thing to be with a man. It was one of those things where I just thought, like, if it ever, you know, came up, like, cool, sure, I'm happy to explore. But it wasn't something that was ever on my conscious radar.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so
you hadn't planned it by the sound.
Exactly.
Of it, yeah.
I hadn't planned it. It wasn't something that I ever, you know, I never walked into a room and thought, oh my God, that guy is so hot or attractive. It was just not something. I mean, of course, you know, I'm human. I know who's attractive and who's not.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something I felt physically attracted to anybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, being in that moment, I probably wouldn't have said anything if it were any other time in my life. And honestly, part of me thought, like, am I just scared I'm going to die? And this is a human within proximity. And like, I'm just attracted because it's a human. And so I didn't know. And I was confused. But I also knew that if I was going to die, I didn't want to not be courageous. I wanted to speak up. And so I, at the time, was like doing crazy things. I was writing handwritten letters to every member of my family, telling them everything I never said to them. And so here I was doing all this stuff, and I thought, I've just got to speak up about this. And so one day I mustered up the courage, and I said, Garrett, I don't know how you're going to take this. I don't know if you're going to want to punch me in the face, but I feel something. And it doesn't feel sexual. It doesn't feel romantic, but I would be lying if I didn't say I felt like our relationship has changed, and I don't know what that means. And, you know, I am so lucky that Garrett is probably the most thoughtful person in the world. So there probably isn't a thing that you could say to Garrett that he wouldn't think about. And so he said, okay. And he's like, you know, I do feel like our relationship has gotten closer. I think things have changed. And we started talking about it.
So I'm just interrupting you.
Please.
Was Gareth already, had he been with men before? Or was he?
He hadn't. No, he, you know, Garrett, I don't know if he would have been more likely to explore being with a man if he weren't in the situation he was. But Garrett had just recently broken up with a woman who he had been dating for 6.5 or 7 years.
So on the outside, to be like super dense and over here. So on the outside, it was basically, it seemed like two straight, like heterosexual men, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
And so it was, you know, I mean, my thought was he was not going to take this well, but he really thought about it and we started talking about it. I remember he wrote me this really long email one day to kind of condense his thoughts, everything he's felt. And after about a few months of talking about this, we really thought we want to explore something here. And, you know, we weren't sure we were ever going to physically connect because this was not something that was comfortable to either of us. You know, I remember people will always ask me like, oh, when you are in love with someone, you know, it must have been amazing the first time you kissed. No, it was weird and horrible. You know, I had never felt facial hair when kissing somebody before.
Right.
And I felt very uncomfortable. Like it was something that after we kissed one time, we didn't kiss for months. And so to, you know, it was really funny looking back, but it was very confusing for me.
Welcome to our world and having to deal with the man folk. Yeah,
right, exactly, right? So now I know. Yeah. And so, you know, it was something that we still dated women and we slept with women and explored a relationship. So we had an mm-hmm. open relationship and we wanted to explore, could we be interested in, you know, intimacy? So we would use, you know, pornography to explore, could I be interested in that act without having to physically act it out? And so we were kind of exploring things or trying to be aroused or turned on by certain things and just experimenting and really going slowly and taking our time with this whole process. And I remember there was a time where Garrett had kissed a woman in front of me and I felt jealous. And I thought, okay, and this was about a little over a year since we were together. And I thought, okay, something has shifted and I don't want him to be physical with women.
It's kind of a nice feeling too when you get that realization.
Yes.
When someone is kind of a bit more of a friend, but you're not sure when you go, oof, no, don't touch
him. Wait a minute. Yeah, something has changed. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So that was, I remember, a big turning point in our relationship. So, and also, you know, because we weren't sure if, you know, when I got better, this was just going to go away, we weren't telling a lot of people in our life because we weren't sure if this was real, if this was something that was going to happen. And if you can't tell already, I'm very vulnerable. I told you that's one of my sensitivities. So that was hard for me to not tell my family or close friends that I was exploring this. But Garrett's a very private person and he wasn't ready to tell people. And so we, you know, set a deadline that we moved in just the two of us And after about a year and a half, or I think it was about 2 years of being together, that if it was serious, we were going to tell our families and tell people. And so at the same time that I'm exploring all of this, I knew I had to leave my job. Because if I was this stressed out and I was vomiting blood, I was probably really sick.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like you're on the way to, well, to not coming back.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That was a dark path. I didn't want to go down it. So I decided to give a year's notice at work. Now, for anybody listening, I never, ever recommend you do that. Mm-hmm. But I was an owner of this company, and I thought that's the right thing to do. And so in that year, I decided I was going to explore, you know, what I want to do with my life. I took herbalism classes, and I went to herbal school because that helped me heal. I went to, you know, nutrition school, which helped me heal. I was doing all types of psychic stuff. And I was also navigating my first same-sex relationship, healing myself, and working full-time. It was the worst year of my life.
You like to do everything at once, right? Like,
all at once,
you
don't
It sounds, you know, like you like things to be intense because that's a lot to take on.
It's a lot to take on. It was a hardcore year.
Yeah.
But at the end of that year, it just so happened that it coincided that the date that we had decided we were going to tell our family by was the end of the year, the end of December. That was also when I left my job. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of happened at the same time. And we told our families, and most people were supportive. Some weren't, but they got there eventually. I won't name names today. But I have to tell you my dad's reaction because I thought it was so interesting. So when I told my dad, you know, that I'm with Garrett, and it was really interesting because I think when most people are quote unquote coming out, they're coming out about who they are, their sexuality, and there are things that change in their lives. But for us, that wasn't the case. You know, I think a lot of my gay friends, when they came out, they started going to gay bars or, you know, dressing in different ways. And that wasn't the case for us because it didn't feel like our identity had changed. It felt like I was in a relationship with a man. Mm-hmm. And so when I told my dad, you know, I wasn't coming out as gay, I didn't even know what my sexuality was, or a bisexual, a pansexual, I was coming out as I'm dating Garrett. And my dad said, so wait a minute, let me get this straight. You're leaving your job and you found yourself a rich boyfriend. You're so smart.
Oh, you left that part out. Yeah, yes, that's good.
So it was so funny, you know, the way that my dad handled. And so it was people, you know, in general, my family was pretty supportive. And so anyway, we, you know, were out and we were, you know, telling just family and close friends about our relationship.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I was working as an herbalist for Boston's tech entrepreneurs because I got sick. I thought I could help some of these people not be sick, but I didn't love it and I wasn't making a lot of money. And I thought, oh, well, crap. I thought, okay. I can figure this out. I've got a lot of good stories. You know, I wasn't ready to talk about my relationship yet. But I was ready to talk about the fact that I was really successful. I got sick and, you know, I realized success wasn't what I was cracked up to be. And I want to help people heal. And so I started writing a blog. And within 3 months, somebody reached out to me. I got an email and someone said, I'm a publisher. I really like your voice. Can I just give you a book deal?
Can you say to listeners who don't know what is it you're referring to?
Yeah, so it was just about success. It was just about redefining success for yourself.
I thought it was about the love story.
Yep, so it wasn't yet about that. I wasn't ready to talk about that yet. No, you're perfect. So I got this book deal, but in the book, my publisher wanted me to talk about the relationship. And I said, okay, I think I'm ready to talk about it. And so I wrote that in the book. You know, I sent in my manuscript, and then I thought, oh, shit. Like, I haven't even told people in my life about this. They can't find out on the shelves of Barnes & Noble. I have to tell people about this. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I'm already writing a blog. I'm just going to do a blog post about this because it is so much better than having all these one-on-one conversations to just put it out there and let people talk behind my back and then they can come ask me questions if they want.
Yeah, let them have their reactions. And then
exactly. And I don't have to be involved.
Exactly. Was this after you told your dad and...
It was after. Okay, so about December, we had told all of our family. Yeah.
That's fine. Well, then everyone else can read it through the blog.
Exactly. That's what I thought. This was in the spring of that year. So I write a blog post about this.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was writing for a national publication that was kind of more of a niche publication. It was wellness, but it did have a national presence. And they said, you know, Mike, we really love the story you wrote. Would you let us reprint your story and just add a few more details? And I said, okay, that's fine. And so I said, I already put it out into the world. There's nothing different. I'm just going to give it to you. And I went to bed that night. I woke up the next morning and 100,000 people had shared it.
Wow.
I can't describe to you how overwhelming it is to wake up to millions of people talking about your sex life.
I can't imagine. I don't even like when.
Yeah, not something I wanted. Yeah, no. Not something I expected. You know, it was really hard for me because I was still exploring my sexuality. Right. I didn't know how I defined myself. Mm-hmm. And here you have literally thousands of emails. I'm not kidding when I say I got thousands of emails of people accusing me of things. And really from all sides, every sexual orientation.
To give context, can you give us like, what was the year for that?
This was 2014.
Okay, yeah.
So this was a little bit back. Yeah. And people were, you know, asking, and I think our world has changed a lot in how we talk about sexuality today. But back then, things, you know, it wasn't so long ago, but things were a little bit different.
Oh, yeah, and it was definitely different.
Yeah, and it was really overwhelming to have people, you know, not even, you know, really even believing in bisexuality, quite frankly, or pansexuality or sexual fluidity, and to accuse me of lying or talking about these things. And then there were other people who wanted me to be a spokesperson for these issues. And I was like, listen, like I didn't ask for any of this. You know, I don't know.
This was just supposed to be an informational blog post for the second tier of your relationships. Like,
exactly. Tell a few friends about me. It was not something that
I... It wasn't to be politicized, I think.
Exactly.
They have this need to put everyone in a box. I think it's almost like a human trait, right? It's like, you almost can't fault them, but at the same time, it almost feels like being coerced when people say, can you be a spokesperson for this? Can you do this? And we don't believe in you, or we don't agree with you. It's like, so what? It's your opinion. Like, can you keep it to yourself? You know, it's a very aggressive, I think, on an energetical level, you know, like on an energetical, I can't say the word, energetical level. It is like a really deep violation of your own space when you still, especially when you still kind of figuring it out for yourself. And yeah, and I don't know how that could also be like. I mean, that would be a question I have for you. Is like even how you deal with that outside world coming in and trying to put their own agenda on you.
Yeah, it was hard. You know, my therapist got a phone call that week.
Oh gosh, yeah. Are you need therapy? If you have 100,000 people reading what you need you need a therapist.
Well, and 100,000 people just sharing it. So it was many millions reading it. I mean, it was, you know, it was a lot. It was, and there was a lot of supportive, you know, emails as well, and people who were so grateful I started this conversation, and they have similar situations or they're exploring. So it wasn't all negative, but it was very overwhelming. And, you know, I had a lot of anxiety. I really wanted to shut down and not be public. I definitely didn't talk about it for a few years because, you know, I had NPR calling me and Huffington Post and Yahoo News. And, you know, for a while, I wanted to be more than just my relationship. You know, I felt like people only wanted to talk about me as just my relationship. And so I was there and I wasn't making much money, right? Mm-hmm. I was, you know, but millions of people are talking about me and I had this book deal and I felt like such a failure. And so, you know, we had issues of like people stalking Garrett. So there were definitely some things going on. I mean, people were wanting to write a play about us. We had offers to do, and it was just kind of like, I was like, this is too much. Like, I really want to back away from this.
Yeah.
And so I decided that I really wanted to figure out what my purpose is. Like, who am I and how do any of these experiences connect? Because I was from branding and public relations. I, you know, have this book deal. I've got this viral article. I'm exploring sexuality. I was really sick. Like, I'm an herbalist. How does any of this connect? And I got really obsessed with some of those life purpose teachings. And I mean, I'm not kidding you when I say I have read every life purpose book out there. I have done every training. I can't tell you how many times in my life I have heard, you will know your purpose by the end of these 60 minutes. never happens, but I have heard that many times.
Of course.
And you know, you do enough of this stuff, you hear the same things. Mm. So a lot of them will tell you, you know, figure out your passions, figure out your skills, then figure out what the world needs and find that middle point. Mm. I thought, okay. So how did these things relate? Like, how is my sexuality and my relationships and this book deal and herbalism and PR, how do these things relate? And I thought, oh my gosh, I get it. I'm meant to create a blogging course. And this blogging course is going to help people, sure, get a book deal, but it's also going to be deep and spiritual. It's going to be about finding their voice, knowing who they are, you know, connecting with the parts of themselves that they're hiding from themselves. And I thought, this is perfect. And so I put this thing out into the world, and I put everything into it. Like, I've got no money left, but I put, you know, I got the fancy lighting kit and the microphone. I had a business partner. I had Facebook ads, editing software, you name it. Like, I put a lot into this. I went broke, but I didn't care because I knew my purpose. I knew this was going to take off. And so I put it out into the world, and I think 5 people bought it. Mm-hmm. It was a colossal failure. Mm-hmm. I lost all of my money, thousands of dollars, and I just thought, I am done. I am so done. Like, I went for it this year. I put myself into the world. I went for love. I left my job. I got a book deal. Millions of people are talking about me and invading my privacy, and no, the world doesn't want what I have to offer. All they want to do is talk about me as Garrett's boyfriend and not for anything I want to put out into the world. And I was so frustrated. And I was so depressed that I just decided I was quitting and I was leaving and going back to my old job. And I didn't even know if I had a job, beg my partners to take me back. I didn't know if I had a job in my own company, but I had to beg them because I didn't have anything else I could do. And so I decided to host what I call a failure celebration. And really the thinking around that was, I felt like such a failure, but I thought, you know what? At least I did things that got me to failure. At least I took risks. At least I did something. I don't want this year to just blow by and forget that I did things. And so I decided to take the one thing I was still confident at, which was public relations and branding. And I said, I'm just going to give this away for free. So, like, I'm going to go into a Facebook group I'm a part of and offer as many branding sessions as I can give away for free, because tomorrow I am quitting and I'm going to work in public relations. And so, you know, I'm used to working with, like I said, a lot of tech entrepreneurs and healthcare politicians and people like that. But these people were more like psychics and artists and writers and coaches and all types of cool people. And I, you know, did 6 sessions that day. It took me all day long. I did over 9 hours of work, but I didn't care. And at the end of each of those sessions, each person said to me some variation of, Mike, you didn't just tell me my brand, you explained my entire purpose. Everything's
trying
to make sense.
Is that how you got to the map sensitivities?
This is exactly how it was all part of the same story. So I'm sitting there like, what the freak are you talking about? Like, I don't even know what's wrong with you? This felt crazy to me, but at this point, what do I have to lose? So I started to map my own. I started to do the process on them, which was just branding, had nothing to do with purpose. And I came out with 6 words. And those 6 words are aligned, zany, free, unmistakable, successful, and vulnerable.
And those obviously custom to you, right? So like, it'll be different for different people.
Well, of course. Yes, yes, yes.
When I was hearing your story just now, is that I put down, like, I was writing, I was making some notes, and it's like, you know, when you said that, you know, you put everything into the previous one and you had, like, you know, Facebook ads and editing software and all that stuff. And I was just like, I wrote down forcing. And then the next one was like, not the road of least resistance. And I think that's very much something that is something that you can only sort of experience wise. And you realize that when that post that went viral about you and Gareth, that wasn't something that you intended, from hearing you, right? It's like not consciously something that you intended for it to be spin off in that way. And it's the same thing when you offered, well, let me just, you know, what I've got to lose, I'm going to back to my day job. A bit more than a day job because you're like a co-owner, but, you know, like back to the corporate world. And, well, let me just do this thing like one last time. And is that when we really, I think that it's almost like when we remove that expectation of what it ought to be, when we remove the what we should be doing, when we stop planning and forcing things, because it's, you cannot control outcomes because you cannot control people. So it's I think it's a beautiful, almost like a beautiful way, like your story of showing actually how the road of least resistance is really the way the way to go for many of us, you know?
Yes. You know, I always say you never have to try to be yourself. If you're trying, it means you're being somebody else. Mm. And I think about when we're having coffee with a best friend and hours fly by and genius just spills out of us and we forget to try. Like that's, you know, that's when we're in touch with our sensitivities. That's when we are just being and being exactly who we are. And, you know, I've found that if we can map that, we can actually teach ourselves how to do that all the time, whether it's in an interview, whether it's in business, whether it's in relationships, because that's all the world wants from us. They just want us to be ourselves, but we forget and we think we have to be something else. So anyway, I'm sitting here realizing these six words. And this light bulb went off because I realized, oh my God, with Garrett, I have never felt to be that safe and vulnerable or that, you know, unmistakably me or that zany and crazy and weird than I am with Garrett. And every relationship I have that allows me to feel those things feels really good to me. And everything that doesn't, that's why it hasn't worked out. That's why it struggled. And it was like I have this map. And so I went, you know, I checked my email. Thankfully, at this point in my life, I'm not getting thousands of emails a day. And I saw that one of the women I worked with that day said to me, hey, Mike, you know, I told my friend about this. I was raving about you. She wants to buy this from you. What do you call it? Do you sell these sessions? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it's not a thing. I just made it up. I said, it's branding, but you're telling me it's life purpose. I guess it's sacred. I'll call it sacred branding. Just made up that term. The next day I had one client, so I didn't call my PR guy partners again because I had a client. So I worked with one person that next day. The day after that, I had two clients. 3 weeks later, I had 30 clients. And that was 7 years ago. So I never ended up going back. And now I get to do that work daily where I help people to map those sensitivities and begin to understand their own sexuality, their own gender, their own business magnetism, or, you know, getting on TV shows, or, you know, we have drag queens doing, I mean, it could be literally anything. I've worked with every person you can imagine.
So with that, obviously, you know, giving away everything, so obviously I would, you know, obviously, you know, I would want people to come and find out through you. Yeah. But is there, in terms of like, if someone's listening and they're like, well, I'd love to know, you know, how do I start? How do I find out what my maps are, like, what is my sacred branding, or what is my, I don't know what the difference is between sacred branding and the map sensitivities.
So sacred branding is just the formal name I give to the process. Mapping sensitivities is what I'm actually doing. So I kind of call it mapping sensitivities, what we're doing. And sacred branding is just, if you hire me, it's called a sacred branding session.
And so the map sensitivities, like, you know, when you say like you have your six words, are those, so how do people sort of use those words and how do they get to those words? Like, how, what's the...
Yeah. So it's a long process, but what I will tell you is anybody listening. So A, we can do a demo today that will take us a few minutes. B, if anyone's listening and they're like, oh, I just want a taste of this, on our website, we have a free worksheet that you can go through and begin to get a taste. And so if you just go to mikeimle.com/map, M-A-P, you can download a worksheet and there's a 36-minute training to guide you through it. And that will just help you begin to map some of your life and get a sense. Now, I'll be honest with you, I'm good, but I'm not that good. So I do these sessions in 2.5 hours. It's not going to get you the full 2.5 hour place, but it will get you some sense of what's going on here.
It gives you like a flavor so people can go on it and try. So, okay, so if you wanted to do, so you mentioned the demos. If you want to just like a short one, like a time, like...
Yeah, so if you want to be my guinea pig, I'm happy to map some of yours right now.
Okay, we could just do a, like one or two. Like, you don't have to, because obviously I would want people to go, it's not to try to extort anything from you. It's
Don't worry.
I guess it could make it fun.
So to be perfectly honest with you, I have invented a way to do this. This is not sacred branding at all, but I've invented a way to do map your sensitivities because like I ask this so much on interviews that I was like, okay, how do I show them it really quickly? So don't worry. Okay. I made this up. But Angie, what I'd love from you is to take a moment and close your eyes.
Okay.
And I would love for you to think of three jobs or roles you've had in your life. And so what I mean by that is this could be a job even back since high school, could be any job. It could be a role like I'm a mother, I'm a, you know, partner, I'm a sister, or a volunteer position. So it could be something you're paid for, something you're not, doesn't matter. And I want you to give me one of those roles and tell me three things that you made people feel in that role. For example, let's say you were a teacher. Maybe you made students feel engaged. Maybe you made them feel really safe. Maybe you made them feel connected to the material. So just pick one job or role and give me three things you made people feel.
Oh, wow. This is not easy to to think of. Because I can't really think about day jobs because those were never like things that I enjoyed.
It doesn't have to feel purposeful. It could be a bad job.
Well, I guess I think like maybe like the latest which I really enjoy is like the... Well, actually, one of them would be like, you know, the podcasting, around like podcasting workshops. Mm-hmm. And when you said those words, I was like, yeah, because I've just been going through their feedback. And so a podcasting workshop is, I guess how I made them feel was that it wasn't as hard as they thought it would be. So it's easier than it would be. They felt supported and they felt, I guess they felt engaged. I kept saying engaged, but I'm not sure if this is a good example. Cause I feel like I'm trying. This sounds like almost like I'm selling my products. I don't really want to.
Nope, you're doing great. Don't worry. Don't worry. You are doing so perfect. Let me handle it. You don't have to overthink it. You're doing awesome. So you help people to feel easy, engaged, and supported. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Give me another job or role and three things you made people feel.
When I was a recruiter. So I guess on my. I guess my team would feel different. My boss would feel different. We didn't have a good relationship.
No, that's okay.
But my candidates, I guess what I really, I'm not sure if I made them feel that, but it was, I did enjoy, one of the things I really, really wanted was to make sure that regardless if they got a job through me or through another recruiter, is that they knew what to do. So they felt empowered. So I'd give them loads of interview techniques and you know, how to change their CV and all these kind of stuff. So I want to make sure that they got the job. It was really important for me that they got what they needed and wanted, and I wasn't going to push a job just so I could hit my commission quota, you know? So I think, I think a lot of them, like, we became friends, friendly. So how did I make them feel? I don't know, like, I guess they're always really excited when I got them the job they wanted. Yeah. So I guess I would feel excited. I call it like that. Like that they mattered.
That's beautiful.
Mattered and they were worth it, you know. Yeah. That not to, in the sense that they didn't need to be so uber grateful that they got a job. Like the interview was also for them to gauge the future employer. Mm-hmm. So to equalize the thing.
So lots of things you just gave me there. But we heard, you know, that they mattered, they felt empowered, they felt worthy, they felt, you know, friendly with you. So beautiful. So many beautiful things. Okay. Mm-hmm. One more job and three things you made people feel.
So when I did stand up.
Cool.
So I guess I probably made them feel different things, but what I can tell that what I enjoyed was I enjoyed when I made them laugh. And when I shocked them a little bit. So I guess, I guess just like when I just love when they were smiling and laughing. But how they felt, I guess it's a bit hard to know.
No. I mean, and we can project onto them. We don't have to interview anybody here. Yeah. So you made people feel happy and laughing and smiling and, you know, engaged with the material and shocked a little bit.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. Now, I want you to think of one of the most challenging moments of your life, a moment that was tough, not re-traumatizing to think about, but something that you think like, ugh, that was a tough one.
Yeah.
And you don't have to tell us what it is if you don't want to, but I want you to tell me three things you felt in that moment.
Overwhelmed. Dumb.
Yeah.
Like, obviously in the midst of it, right? Not coming out of it.
Yeah, in the midst of it,
So is it overwhelmed, dumb? I don't know what the word would be for this, but it's like this feeling of really, it's like very much in my head and like not actually flowy. It feels very staccato, you know, it feels very like heavy.
Okay, heavy. Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. And now, if you had a magic wand and you could have changed the whole situation and made yourself feel whatever you would have wanted to feel, you know, instead of very, you know, heavy and, you know, kind of stuck and dumb, what do you think you would have rather have felt?
Well, I guess like light in the process.
Yeah.
It's weird because I'm not even sure if this is the right example. But yeah, I think I guess lights and actually understand that, you know, obviously I quickly found out I wasn't dumb. But in that time, I thought I was. So, you know, I guess like just trust that I would figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, so light and trusting and beautiful. Okay,
yeah.
One final question here. Let's flip it and make it positive. I want you to think of one of the happiest moments of your life, a moment that just felt good and successful. And I want you to tell me three things you felt in that moment.
Let me think. I guess like exhilarated, light, and happy.
Beautiful, beautiful. And now all we're going to do is map. So everybody listening, you can do this right alongside me. We're just going to look at themes we've seen. How many times do we hear Angie say light or heavy? We heard that a bunch of times. So there we go. We already have one thing that we've just looked at. We've heard you talk about, you know, helping people to feel engaged and empowered and excited a whole bunch of times. So let's drop in that word engaged right there. Okay. We have heard you talking about, you know, things being difficult or feeling difficult in your bad moment and how you helped people to feel easy, that it could be easy to get a job. So there we go. We're going to drop in the word easy. So already we have light, we have engaged, we have easy. We heard you wanted to make people feel excited or happy. Let's throw in that word happy right there. And just off of this, we're just playing right now. We have already a few sensitivities that we've just mapped. Now, this isn't the end all be all, but it's helping us to think that, okay, one thing you're really sensitive to is light, happy, engaged, easy. And so I'm going to guess that some of the best, happiest moments of your life felt very light and engaging and happy and easy. And some of the hardest moments felt heavy.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you were stuck or dumb or it wasn't easy. It was difficult. And you didn't feel so passionate or engaged. You didn't feel happy. Maybe you felt depressed.
Yeah.
What we've just seen now, okay, is we have a little formula here. So now we can start to play in some really interesting ways. I'm going to guess that some of your favorite people you know are people that are super engaging, and they're people that seem to like always be able to cheer you up or make you happy. And they're probably people who are really, you know, make things feel a little bit lighter. They might be really light or spiritual or fun people. Mm-hmm. And so now what we can start to do is say, okay, here are some of your turn-ons. We know that if we're going to talk about sex and sexuality, you are turned on and excited about life when you are feeling engaged, when someone's present with you and they're there with you in the moment, right? You need that to be turned on.
Because for me, it's a space I go to, not things I do. That makes sense. It's a place I go to.
So you are going to feel really good about that. You know, if something is difficult and heavy, it's not going to feel good for you. We want ease. We want flow. We want to feel naturally like you because that's one of your sensitivities. Now, if I were asking you a question, if we flip the script and I were the host and I was saying, hey, Angie, you know, what do you think people need to know during this time of COVID? And you're like, oh God, that's a big question. I don't know the answer. And then you think to yourself, okay, Angie, all I've got to do is be easy and be happy and be engaging and, you know, be really light in the situation. Say, well, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know. But what I do know is that right now we're craving engagement. We're craving connection. We're craving these really powerful conversations with one another. And so what I do know is that when we can go and find the places that make us happy, that make us feel alive, that make us feel engaged right now and have those conversations and having some joy in our lives and bring some lightness and some fun and not have things be so heavy all the time, that's one of the best things we can be doing right now. And now, I don't know you from a hole in the wall. We've only just met today. But I'm going to guess that that's something you might say in real life. And I'm sure you could say a lot better than I just did. But what I'm doing is I'm basically understanding like, okay, this is how Angie starts to see the world. This is how she might say things. These are the traumas she struggled with, where she's felt things were very heavy and difficult and dark. And that means she's also sensitive to the light side of those. And that starts to give us a really great formula from everything from business to what you want to do with your life as a job to, you know, sex to relationships to whatever.
This, you know, this is interesting because definitely, like, I think a lot of the things that I feel, one of the things that really enjoy is to make people feel empowered or heard, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm going to be cuddling them. You know, I don't like to enable people and I do it at times, and I was definitely doing it in the past. But I think it, you know, I wanted to sort of like put like a discernment with the light and the, because like it is true, like in terms of like you were saying with the COVID example, right? So it could be anything, like, you know, so obviously we just had a pandemic, but like I'm definitely someone, I definitely believe that, you know, I'm HSP, you know, highly sensitive person. So so for example, like I don't actually follow the news on a regular basis. And it's not because I don't care. It's not because I don't see the suffering or because I don't, it's because actually when I look at it and I feel so strongly, like I really, like it can really, I like I absorb it and I really can, I feel the struggle. But me being in that dark and heavy place does not help those people, does not help them. And it does not help me either, but on a selfish level, right? But it's like, I know that if I take distance from those things and I make sure that I feel lighter and I feel good, I actually have a better impact on people around me and I can actually create more of a change. I'm not someone who enjoys, you know, I'm not like the... You know, a lot of people are like the very publicly activists. I'm not like that at all. Like I'm more like, because I see things a bit differently. I don't believe in good or evil. I think there's a lot more gray. Life is in the gray. And yeah, I think, yeah, this is really interesting you were saying.
And I think how often do we shame ourselves for how we naturally are? It's like, I should be like this, or I wish I were like that. And so we know that with somebody like light and empowered, that's not, you know, heavy news things may be overwhelming for you. That's not going to be the best, you know, contribution you can make to the world.
No.
It's not going to make you feel really, really great. But when you know your sensitivities, you can put yourself in the place where you can really make a difference. And that's what we all want.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a difference between being informed, but then how do you say, drowning in information, right? And I think I try and say like informed, but then I was trying to go back to, okay, but what... Like with the thing with the pandemic, I was just like, well, first, you know, I got really, you know, I got carried away as well myself. I got really anxious and stuff because of, you know, my lungs and my health stuff. But then I was just like, wait, let me go back to basics. What have I learned in immunology? Because I've, you know, I've learned immunology, genetics and different things. So I'm like, well, let me go back to basics. And this is what I know is going to help me feel better and, you know, strengthen my immunity. And one of the thing is stress is not going to help, right? So I was just like, I was telling, you know, people around me, I was like, you know, well, stress is a big component to health, which obviously you've experienced yourself as well. There was something that stood out before, you know, before we had this conversation. You mentioned about your brand in bed, right? So is this what you mean? Is this sort of related to the map sensitivities? Like when people know, like for you, like it was vulnerability and zany and, and things like that. How do you marry that with what's your brand in bed or brand in your business? Or?
Absolutely. So, you know, here's the thing about branding, and I want to break this down for us, is branding, the word itself is objectifying. So, you know, the word branding means to burn. And we know that already because you brand cattle, right? You burn a number into cattle. Yeah. And even during, you know, the arguably one of the most objectifying moments in the last century, the Holocaust, human beings were branded, right? We were reduced to something. We were branded. Mm. That, you know, yes, people can listen to me and say, Mike, you are being unnecessarily provocative and, you know, controversial. And you don't need to say that. But the truth is that even up to today, I work with many people who say to me, I feel limited by my brand. I feel like I'm supposed to be the bubbly life coach and I'm going through a divorce and I don't know how to talk about it. Mm. I don't know how to stay on brand. And this is a conversation I hear daily. And so one thing that I'm really interested in my work is to understand that I don't want to have to be someone because it's imposed upon or I'm kind of burned or marked with it. I naturally have a brand of who I am as a friend, right? I'm like this energy of who I am as a friend and this energy of how I interview, which is different than other people, and this energy of how I have sex. And what is that, that brand of who I am? So what we're doing is we're subverting it. We're taking something that is seemingly objectifying. We're saying, wait a minute, we all have a brand of who we are. And that brand is seen through our sensitivities. We sense life. We see, taste, touch, smell, hear life.
Well, actually, when you say brand, the way you explain it, I hear soul. So you're moving away from yeah, that's what you're completely
exactly.
moving away
we're
from.
We're redefining it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what we're saying is, you know, you want to talk about brand and business. I want to know the energy medicine, the soul, the who you are and how you show up in business that no one else can. Mm-hmm. I want to know the way that you do interviews like no one else can, the way you can have sex like no one else can. And here's the thing, because we experience everything through our senses, it's your sensitivities. And if I am sensitive to vulnerability, the best sex I can ever have is when I feel vulnerable. And I can make people feel incredibly vulnerable and have be safe to be vulnerable in bed. Just like I'm going to have vulnerable conversations in every interview I have. Just like I'm going to help my clients feel vulnerable really easily. I know my skills and my abilities, and I know what I can help the world with most. And when we start to understand this, it really changes our relationship with sex. Because here's the thing, like, we aren't just having sex to get off. I mean, sure, we can do that, but it's not very fulfilling or good sex.
No, it's not.
I want sex where I feel zany and wild and playful. I want sex where I feel vulnerable and I can go deep. Yeah. I want sex where I can be free and not stuck by limitations. That's good sex for me. Now, every one of us has different definitions of good sex based on our sensitivities. And when we understand that, that's our brand in bed. And when we know that, it builds confidence. Because here's the thing, most of us are having sex thinking that sex is about performance when it's not. Sex is connection, it's not performance. Yeah. We think it's about performance and then we try to be someone else. Or we try to do things we've read in the magazine or we've heard about that we think we're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
And that's total crap, it's bullshit. Yeah. Because what we really want is sex that makes us feel like ourselves, that feels natural and tunes us back into who we actually are. Mm. And that's good sex. I always say the only definition of good sex is sex that feels good for all people involved. That's it.
Yeah, because good sex is also, it can be very, sorry I interrupted you, but it's like it can be very, please, very therapeutic, because
absolutely,
it's also how we transcend also a lot of our, I don't know how that works with the sensitivities, but you know, you can see sometimes, I'll give you a clear example. With I had a guest, Mistress Marley. She's a professional dominatrix.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of her clients, a big chunk of her clients are white men.
Yeah.
And I was like, that makes so much sense. Like to me, like, in, you know, within that, I forgot to say. So she's African-American. I don't know what I'm allowed to say now. So she, in London, we said she's black, but I don't know, in the US, if we still say African-American.
Yeah, of course.
And so it made sense that a lot of them, they were white, and also a lot of them who give her cash just because, that's it. You know, with just to have like a cash app, and they just give her money every once in a while. And it's like, and I was like, oh, I can see this is like the, it's a way to heal whatever is the guilt or the shame or all of these feelings that each party may feel, right? Or the anger, the resentment. Or how to, and so everyone does it in their own way. So obviously that's maybe like one extreme, for example, but
absolutely,
it's like what people say, you know, oh, there's like a CEO of a big company and he wants to be submissive in bed, you know? It's like, so how do you explain that in the map sensitivities, or how does that?
Absolutely. You know, if people want to use this work explicitly for sex, you know, understanding that, you know, we have sensitivities that we all need to feel and experience in life, and we are exploring them on deeper levels every day. And so I actually just this morning had a different interview that was more specific about sexuality, and we talked about this pretty in depth, because, you know, for me, I know that I want to explore vulnerability, which means I want to explore being very submissive and being very dominant and having someone else be submissive. And that's important sex for me. You know, I want to explore zaniness as role play. I want to play different parts and be silly and goofy. And so in every moment, not just sex, but every moment of my life, I want to explore all the different parts of myself. And if there are places in my life where I'm not able to explore those other parts of myself, like your example of the businessman who maybe doesn't get to explore his submissive side all the time, this is something that sex can be incredibly safe and therapeutic to do. And we can begin to look at that and say, hey, wait a minute, there's a sensitivity, there's an unmet need here that I want to be all of myself. And so can I ask for what I need in the bedroom? And I know that my husband knows that when we have sex, I am, you know, I always say, like, listen, I've got to be very vulnerable. I'm going to say some stuff. I can't be judged by it. Like, whatever comes up, comes up.
Yeah.
And my husband, Garrett, will laugh and say, you know, I'm not sure you like having sex with me. I just think you like having transformation and you use me. But it's because for me, sex is a place where we can transmute shame.
Yeah.
And we can be very vulnerable. And so, you know, understanding that any of these things, whether it's friendship, whether it's business, whether it's sex, they're all places for healing. And if we understand who we are and what we most want to feel, we can start to, you know, redesign them based on what's going to be really helpful for us to continue growing spiritually, emotionally, mentally, whatever.
I love this. This is great. I think, like you were saying, you know, about, for example, the CEO being vulnerable, you said like about an unmet need. And I feel sometimes it could almost be like, you know, we make decisions all day. I don't want to be making decisions there.
Yes.
Just, you know, just take over. Let me just enjoy and receive, right? Because,
absolutely,
you know, being in that masculine energy is not actually fun. It's quite draining, you know, it gets things done. But at the same time, it's like you're not getting really nourished if you don't see a reciprocal, if you don't see a happiness in return or a gratitude back, right? So
absolutely,
I can see how in the bedroom just being, you know, spoiled and treated and just not having to make decisions.
Yes. You know? I mean, everyone listening, you know, raise your hand if it's sexy to be submissive sometimes. I'm raising my hand. And to be dominant sometimes then too. Yeah. Like, we are very dynamic beings and exploring all the parts of ourselves. And, you know, sex can be, when we have safety and when we, you know, provide a really safe container, we can explore power dynamics and things that we don't always have the ability to explore outside of the bedroom.
Yeah.
And I think knowing those sensitivities and knowing that quote unquote brand in bed is really important, because then we have the tools to ask for what we need. You know, I think that's my favorite part about knowing sensitivities, is I can say, hey, Garrett, I don't feel safe to be vulnerable here. Or, hey, wait a minute, I don't feel like I've gotten to be zany and playful, or I don't feel free to express this. And now it gives me language to ask for what I need in that moment.
Oh, I see. So actually, when you have, so let's say your six words, you actually understand why in that moment you can't relax and you're not feeling it.
Exactly.
Where there is actually, it could even be like, you know, let's say do a podcast interview, right? Like, I've realized actually the ones that when I'm like, oh, if something doesn't feel quite right, like it's not flowing, like it's a feeling for me. Like I can tell if it's going to be good. It's like, I just, there's no words for it other than, I guess, light, like you were saying, right?
Yeah.
So the minute it feels heavy and I'm trying too hard in the edit to make it work, I'm like, this can't be put out. I can't, because this is not on purpose. And I guess the thing in bed, I like the fact that you mentioned about the vulnerable word, because then you can, like you said, you can just phrase it. You can say, I can't get into the place where I'm vulnerable. Like, you know, we need to, I don't know if you say we need to talk about it, but this is like, I like how now this becomes a tool of actually a reference point. Actually, oh, that's the feeling I'm not getting. That's the state I'm not in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What we feel is never wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, humans are not irrational creatures. We say all the time that humans are irrational. We're not. We're very rational. We just may not always understand the reason we feel the way we do. But that reason's always going to come back to the same core sensitivities. So, you know, whether I'm in a fight with my husband and, you know, we get into that fight, and like I mentioned before, that he might be looking down at his phone, and I say, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm feeling overly vulnerable here. I can literally use those words, and that's helpful for me to say, I'm feeling too vulnerable here, and you're not, you know, holding space for that. So I'm, you know, here's what I want to work on. Here's what you want to work on. It changes the conversation. Well, let's talk about sex. Let's talk about dirty talk for a moment, because people are very uncomfortable with dirty talk. And I always say, use your sensitivities. So, you know, these are the things that turn you on. So maybe you say, like, you know, I'll say like, oh yeah, I feel so vulnerable in this position. It just feels, oh my God, you have power over me. You're controlling me. That can be, if we're not comfortable with dirty talk, that's a great way to get started, because we can literally use that language. We know
like that
turns us on, right?
Yeah,
we know
yeah.
like, oh, you're just being so free and wild right now. Great. Use that language.
There's actually words of encouragement as well if your partner says that to you. Like, really? I'm free? I'm wild?
Well,
this is great.
And we know what turns us on, so we want our partner to keep doing that. So praise them with the words of what you're feeling, and they're going to say, hey, wait a minute. This person likes when they feel vulnerable. Let me keep doing this to help them feel that way.
Wow, I love this. I love this. This is great. Yeah, just so funny because I didn't think it would. You know, I didn't realize how you could actually put this into practical. So this has been really helpful, actually. Is that, you know, in terms of the word, you know, you very generous in explaining around, you know, the brand in bed. I was just wondering if there was any, like, how would we use one of those words with the map sensitivities?
Yeah.
When it comes to work in business, how we show up and what we do, because obviously a lot of people are pivoting at the moment.
Yes. Mm. This is a great question. You know, a lot of different ways. So the first thing I always say is, first of all, our sensitivities tell us our greatest skills. So we know that, hey, I bring to the table a lot of vulnerability, and so that's going to tell me I'm really good at bringing teams together. You know, I can be a good manager, hearing what's really going on. I also know that, you know, I am very free and creative. So I'm a big idea person. So the first thing it can do is start to tell us what some of our skills are that we may not realize are those hidden skills. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, if you are on interviews right now, use your sensitivities. It's my favorite thing to do. I will literally use them and just say, you know, how do you think that that you contribute to the success of this industry? Or I'll say, you know, I'm really big on freedom. What freedom do you feel like? Is there a lot of autonomy in this program? Or do you feel like in this job, you know, things are micromanaged? I mean, I might not use the word micromanaged because it's probably not a nice word. But it gives me a sense of, is this the right job for me? Is this the right fit?
Saying autonomy is a great word to use. Because
exactly.
It actually comes off as responsible. Whereas you say, are you going to leave me alone?
Right, exactly. But what we're doing there is we're number one, knowing what our skills are. And then number two, knowing our needs and being able to use those words directly or subbing out a word. And that way we can see, is this really a fit for me? If we have a job where people are going to be all over me and one of my sensitivities is free, it's not going to be the right fit for me. I'm not going to love that job. Mm-hmm. And so dropping those in can be really, really helpful. And remembering what we actually bring to the table. You know, I think a lot of people right now may be out of work and may feel really bad about themselves. And remembering that these are the things you bring to the table. And if we are starting entrepreneurial ventures, I'm going to give you a little formula right now that is so fun. Okay. What do I do for work? Well, let me give you my words again. Aligned, zany, free, unmistakable, successful, and vulnerable. Okay. I literally align people's vulnerabilities, their zaniness and weirdness and too muchness, the things that make them unmistakable, so they can be free to be successful in all ways. Mm-hmm. I just made that up on the spot. But guess what? We can do that. When we know our sensitivities, we can start to say, oh my gosh, here's a description of what I do best. Or here's the type of jobs I want to do. Because it makes sense. You know, I will tell you, I work with, you know, a lot of podcasts. And people, I can't tell you how often heard becomes one of the sensitivities. And I'm like, so do you think podcasting is a good fit for you? Of course it is. We heard you're sensitive to being heard or not heard. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So it can also help us to think about what type of jobs we may want to interview for.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it also explains why our natural curiosity gets us to somewhere. You know,
exactly.
Like how I fell into podcasting was, it's kind of almost like a very primal reaction to something. It was like very, like, I thought about it for a while, like for a year or two, but I was like, I wasn't sure what the angle was going to be. And one day I woke up and it was there. I was like, well, now I know. And now I know what the engine behind is. And I just it's very important to feel that. And I guess, like, to round up, would there be anything, you know, for body image? Because I think that is so important for people to feel good in their skin, you know?
Yeah, so I'll tell you my story, which is I didn't feel sexy or empowered about my own body, and I didn't feel attractive. I felt like a lot of people were sexualizing me. When my story went viral, I was getting a lot of sexual messages. I felt very uncomfortable with my body.
Yeah.
And so I had been doing this work for a number of years.
It makes you feel unsafe as well.
Unsafe, exactly. Yeah, very horrible. Unsafe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I thought, I've been doing this work for a while, and I help other people with this. Come on, Mike, you can figure this out. So I said, okay, with my body, what would make me feel vulnerable and free and zany? And I thought, oh my God, dancing naked in front of the mirror. And so every day for a year, I turned on, you know, the water to heat up. And for 2 minutes while the water was heating up, I danced naked in front of my mirror before I got in the shower. Mm-hmm. And I danced vulnerably. and zanily and freely. And I remember, you know, I felt uncomfortable. I didn't want to look at my body all the time. So I would see this crease or this mark. I wanted to close my eyes. But I looked. Every day for a year, I kept looking. And at the end of that year, I didn't even realize this was related at the time, but I booked my first boudoir photo session. And I had a photo shoot with my photographer. And I remember I was so nervous, and I had this bathrobe on. I was nude underneath. And I said, okay, I've just got to be zany and free. And I started dancing. We put on music. And then the bathrobe came off. And the whole photo shoot, we just focused on being these things and feeling these things. And I got those photos back. And I thought, I don't even know if I'm going to show my husband. Like, I'm so uncomfortable with this. And I looked at those photos. And I have never felt that sexy or confident and powerful. Oh, I mean, my mom has seen them. I've posted them on the internet. Those photos are everywhere. You can see these photos of me because I've never felt that powerful before. Yeah. And I realized my entire life, I've seen my body through someone else's eyes, someone else's lens, whether it was what the media told me, what TV or magazines or Instagram told me I was supposed to look like. I never saw them through my own sensitivities. And so going through this process of really understanding my sensitivities and what I am most turned on by and kind of deconditioning from what I'm told I'm supposed to look like has radically changed my relationship with my body. Yeah. And there isn't a room I walk into now where I don't feel like one of the sexiest, most confident people. And that's not to say I think everyone needs to find me attractive. Quite frankly, I don't care. I'm sure
that's the power in it, right? Is that the minute you feel that, you don't care about people's opinion. Exactly. Because it's just their opinion. It's how they see it.
I guarantee there are a lot of people who don't find me attractive, and that's great, but that doesn't feel like it has anything to do with me. That feels like it's about them, and I'm still really sexy and confident and attractive, and that's beautiful. And that's what I want for everybody. And so that's really shifted me personally, and I know it's something that a lot of people have used in my work to start to look at their bodies in completely different ways.
You know, I think that would be so, it is so important to have that feeling and that understanding about other people's perception of us. But it starts really from a perception of ourselves, right? Because yes. I'm I wish I realized when I was a teenager that I look great. I was like, you know, as a teenager, you've got a great body, everything's great. And I wish I'd known, because for years I hated myself for very different reasons. It wasn't like a physical, it wasn't like a logical reason, right?
Yeah.
But you know, it was just my perception of myself. And I think the minute I passed that, the minute that was over, it took me many years, of course, but the minute I was over, I was like, started to actually understand what it meant, like to actually love myself, love my body, respect my body. You know, all of these things is so important. Yeah. And I just wish, like, you know, maybe it's a tangent, but I feel like, you know, if teenagers could go through that, understand that, and or at least, you know, in their early 20s, because the way the beauty industry and society is going now is like, it's completely normal and acceptable for 18-year-olds to get Botox, you know? And I'm mm-hmm. like, you know, and it's not even their fault. It's just it's that conditioning. And it's like, mm-hmm. at 18, you know, unless there's obviously like something going on, like, you know, there could be other things going on, you know, maybe sure. medical reasons and whatnot. But like when everything's okay and you're a healthy person, you know, I see, you know, I've had colleagues, you know, in their 20s, they look great. They're actually, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. Even from a beauty standard magazine, right? Stupid point of view. But, and they go and put Botox on. I'm like, what are you going to do when you're 40? What are you going to do when you're 50? Like, I'm all about maintaining and it's, you know, important to feel good, but it doesn't come from an empowered place, I feel.
Yes.
If you feel, do you know what? This is what I want to do. I love myself, but I want to enhance. Go for it. But if it comes from a place of, I really hate what I'm looking at and I feel like I shouldn't have that many lines and I'm like 25, then there's a problem, right? Like, you know, there's not even any lines. They just feel like there shouldn't be anything. And that's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a huge problem that many of us are facing. I work with a lot of, you know, straight cisgender women and cis gay men. And this is something that comes up quite a bit in both those communities that we are talking about here. And it's just so sad because people will look back to old photos and be like, I hated how I looked. And now I think I was so attractive, but I hate how I look now. Right. And it's this, you know, it really is. I know it in the moment we all think, well, like, how does that happen? How could I feel so beautiful today when, you know, I look exactly the same? And what came up for me, and I want to share this maybe as a closing note, is that what really shifted me is realizing that I wasn't attracted to Garrett at all. I had no attraction to him. And today, I think he is one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life.
I think that's the best start to a relationship, actually. I think that's
Right, well, I agree with you. That does, it is great. Mm-hmm. But how does that happen? How do I go from not finding him attractive to thinking he's so beautiful? Because I love him. Right, and I realized for myself, if I loved myself that much, how would I think about the way I looked? And that's really what started to shift me.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I do want to, I guess I do want to, like, iterate that if someone makes you cringe by the look of them, that's not the same. What I'm hearing from you and what I, how I feel is that if you feel neutral, like there's not like this sexual, you don't have mm-hmm. this crazy attraction straight yeah. away within 2-3 dates, you just want to rip their clothes off. Like, yeah. but it's just more like the neutrality. That's usually yeah. a good sign. If they make you, if your body is like flaring up and cringing, and then you have sure. to listen to that too, right? Sure, but I don't think that's where you were coming from.
Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah.
So, Mike, I'm going to ask you the final two questions I ask all of my guests.
Please.
And the first one is, what do you wish you'd known or learned at 18?
Oh, boy. I think it's that you never have to try to be yourself. If you're trying, it means you're being somebody else. And mm-hmm. I think I've spent so much time, you know, especially when I was younger, really feeling like all this pressure. Like I had to be a certain person or do a certain thing or accomplish certain things. And as we've seen through some of my stories, giving up on that and just being in these moments of surrender have always been the most powerful moments of my life. And today, I hope that most moments of my life, I'm just showing up and I'm hanging out. I didn't have a plan for this interview. We just talk and hang out, and that's how I can kind of just be myself.
Yeah, I love it. And being yourself is so important because you're going to hang out with yourself for the rest of your life.
That's right.
One certainty, whether it's five days or 55 or 100 years, you're going to have you, right? So what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
What do I not put up with anymore? I think that it's people telling me that I'm too much. You know, I think for a lot of time in my life, I was told you're too much, you're too intense or too passionate or too sensitive or too emotional or too whatever. And nowadays, what I see that as is they're telling me you're too much for me to handle in this container. It's kind of like if I had a giant pot of water and I tried to pour it into a little cup and it spilled all over the floor, I wouldn't shame the water for being too much. I would get a bigger pot. And so what that person is telling me is, hey, this isn't the right space for you. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong. But I don't have to internalize that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I can go off and just find the right spaces where I fit.
Exactly. And also, like, people who say that to you is like, well, either like you're in the wrong room, right? Like you said. But it's also like, to me, it also sounds like those are people who are not interested in getting to know you.
Sure.
They have their world and they're not interested in the outside.
Yeah. Or they may not even have the capability to hold space for you, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, you can't force it. Yeah. Yeah. And so Mike, can you please tell us where people can find you? How can they work with you? Give us all the good stuff.
Of course. So you can just find me on my website at mikeimle.com. And if you did want to map your sensitivities similar to what Angie and I did today, and you can go through that whole training yourself, it's just mikeimle.com/map, M-A-P. And that's going to help you to download that worksheet and actually guide you through it so that you can start to think of some of your sensitivities. Of course, if you actually want to work with me and go through the whole 2.5 hours of mapping your sensitivities and definitively knowing them, you can email me and we can see if I have availability. And we also have courses and stuff like that. And also come hang out with me on Instagram. I am newly there. I'm finally getting on the social media train and I need you to pull me out of my shell. So we're having a lot of great conversations about sexuality, body image, and confidence on Instagram. And I want you to come hang out with me.
Perfect. Thank you so much for this, Mike. You've been so generous with all your nuggets of wisdoms. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week, and until then,
use an elf inappropriately.